Tehran says it's trying to enhance cooperation with its neighbors, including with Persian Gulf countries, to establish lasting security in the region. Moscow saying its air defense systems have intercepted four U.S.-made missiles over a southern Russian region bordering Ukraine. And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is re-elected leader of the African National Congress, paving the way for him to run for president in 2024. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Iran says it's trying to promote cooperation with its neighbors and Persian Gulf states to establish lasting security in the region. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian says that Iran is ready to host foreign and defense ministries of regional countries to discuss security issues. He says Iran has repeatedly announced readiness to build trust and cooperate with its neighbors. The top diplomat added that regional states should abandon reliance on foreign powers for their security once and for all. Amir Abdullahian was addressing the third edition of the Tehran Dialogue Forum. This year's initiative is focused on Iran's policy toward its neighbors. It's attended by 70 officials and representatives from 36 countries. Israeli soldiers and settlers have been stepping up their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the occupied West Bank and other areas. Two Palestinian brothers have become the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. A settler deliberately ran over them with his car in Nablus and fled the scene. Hamas's movement has accused the Tel Aviv regime of allowing the perpetrators to get away with such crimes to further incite violence against Palestinians.
An Israeli settler has run over two Palestinian brothers near the city of Nablus in the north of the occupied West Bank, making them the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. According to Palestinian media, Mohammad Mutair and his brother Mohannad had stopped their vehicle by the side of the road near the Zatara military checkpoint south of Nablus to fix a flat tire. It was then that an Israeli settler hit the siblings, who were traveling around with their family members at the time, and fled the scene. The victim's relatives said that 28-year-old Mohammed was killed immediately after being trampled on by the settler, while his brother, 24-year-old Mohannad, was seriously injured in the same accident and was later announced dead due to his injuries. Reacting to the atrocity, Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas-Palestinian resistance movement, said the settlers are escalating their aggression against Palestinians. He added that the formation of the new right-wing government in Israel has apparently emboldened settlers to ratchet up their crimes against Palestinians. He described the incident as a new episode in the series of, quote, Zionist terrorism under the protection of the regime's police and army, saying this crime must be answered by increasing the resistance in the West Bank. Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers have been noticeably escalating their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and other areas, in an attempt to forcibly expel Palestinians from their lands and make way for expanding Israeli settlements. Israeli forces have also been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus, where new groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs described 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians since 2005, when the UN started to keep a tally of Palestinian fatalities. The world body says Israeli forces have shot dead 19 Palestinians, including 3 children, in different incidents across the occupied territories between November 22nd and December 11th. In addition to the killings, Israeli forces have blocked the main entrances of several villages across the West Bank, disrupting livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians.
And yet another provocative move against Palestinian worshippers, scores of Israeli settlers have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds city under a pretext of celebrating the Jewish festival of Hanukkah. Now, Palestinian forces, factions, and commissions have called for defense of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Scores of Israeli settlers, guarded by police, have stormed the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds under the pretext of celebrating Hanukkah holiday. Earlier, the Israeli police stormed Al-Aqsa and forcibly expelled Palestinians stationed inside, paving the way for the illegal settlers to storm the compound. Israeli forces deployed heavily inside Al-Quds Old City in preparation for securing the settlers' incursions and preventing Palestinians from entering the mosque. Israeli settlers intend to storm Al-Aqsa for 8 days to celebrate the so-called Hanukkah, also known as Festival of Lights, which extends from December 18th to December 26th, as settler groups promoted the storming by announcing free transportation for its members. Israeli groups and extremist settlers had previously called for massive incursions into the holy site during the Hanukkah holidays. Hardline Israeli officials and settlers regularly stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. Settlers' incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque frequently trigger clashes that leave casualties among Palestinians. Such acts of violence even led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime in 2021, during which the regime forces killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. Hamas says such incursions are provocative and very dangerous. The movement has urged Palestinians to mobilize immediately in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance movement stressed the Palestinian nation will make sure to protect the mosque under any circumstances, warning Israel of the consequences of raids on the holy site. The Jewish visitation of Al-Aqsa is permitted, but as part of a decades-old agreement between Jordan, the custodian of Islamic and Christian sites in Al-Quds, and Israel in the wake of Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urging European leaders to supply his country with more arms as the war with Russia is grinding through its 10th month.
I ask you to support our country right now with a clear decision to provide everything that can not only maintain the dynamics on the battlefield in Ukraine, but also accelerate the movement of our defense forces to victory, because our victory will be the victory of each of you.
Zelensky urged Western leaders to convince their partners to supply Kyiv with modern weaponry, including armored vehicles and air defense systems, as soon as possible. He was virtually addressing a British led grouping of northern European countries, and that just hours after Kyiv reported a large scale Russian drone attack on its key infrastructure. A local official said on Monday that more than 20 drones were deployed in the strikes. Now, most of the UAVs were poorly brought down, but they incurred damage to critical facilities. Meantime, air raid sirens reporting Kyiv and other regions after two Russian long-range strategic bombers took to the skies in western Russia to Ukraine's east. News review time. Stay tuned to Press TV. Now, Russia says its air defense systems have shot down four U.S.-made missiles and one of the first such claims in nearly 10 months of fighting with Ukraine. Russian Defense Ministry is saying its forces have shot HARM missiles over the Belgorod region. That's a southern Russian area that's regularly hit by Ukrainian strikes. The ministry also says that Russian forces have shot down eight Ukrainian drones. They've also intercepted six rockets fired from the U.S.-made HIMARS and the Soviet-made Uragan multiple-launch rocket systems. I could discuss this. I'm inviting a couple of guests, our own Jana Minner, who is live for us now in Moscow and watching developments in Ukraine. Also with me is Greg Simons, who's a researcher with the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies in Uppsala, Sweden. So, Johnny, beginning with you, bring us an update on the latest regarding the war between Russia and the Ukraine, and also these U.S.-made weapons that Mr. Zelensky has been begging for all this time. Looks like many of them are just going down the drain.
Yeah, so at the moment, the frontline fighting is concentrated around Bakhmut. The Russians have been trying to take that city for a while. If they are able to take it, that opens up the rest of the Donbass region. It seems to be their primary objective. At the moment, that area has been called a meat grinder for Ukrainian troops, as Russia is overwhelming artillery superiority there. And as you say, Zelensky is calling for more and more weapons. At the moment, NATO is not giving Ukraine its most advanced weaponry. It's given the HIMARS system, a very effective missile system, but it's holding off giving other weapons. I recently spoke to a Russian politician, a more hardline politician here in Moscow, who said that Russia has far greater military capability that it's not using, and that they could destroy whole Ukrainian cities if they chose to. And one of the dangers is of NATO giving more technically advanced weapons to Ukraine. If Ukraine was to ever strike further into Russia, if it was to ever hit Moscow, for example, we could well see huge repercussions from the Russian side. So at the moment, this war is, there is more stages of escalation that this conflict can reach, and it looks like it's going that way rather than in terms of peace talks at the moment.
Okay. Now, Greg Simon, speaking of U.S. supplied weaponry, I mean, there are some Western media that are trying to fool the public, maybe especially in the U.S., that the U.S. does really care about the allies, including Ukraine. But some others are there, and analysts, and they're saying, they're arguing that this is only a proxy war that Ukraine is fighting for the U.S., for the West, spearheaded by the U.S., and they're getting victimized. And the main aim is to simply undermine and weaken Russia. How do you look at this?
Well, I mean, the Americans have not been shy about calling what it is. It's a very, shall we say, advanced level of proxy war, because their investment in the proxy war is massive. But I mean, they've been saying from even before the war began, when you had the likes of Nuland, Victoria Nuland and so forth, saying that they'd have a war in Ukraine which would be used to weaken Russia militarily. And I mean, you've had the likes of speakers and representatives of the House and so forth. They've been saying things openly. They've been saying, for example, as so long as we keep supplying Ukraine with weapons, they'll fight to the last man. I mean, this is not concern for a so-called ally or whatever. I mean, this is purely pursuing their own selfish geostrategic imperatives at a time of the decline of American hegemony globally. I mean, as Kissinger said himself at some stage, America has no permanent allies or permanent enemies. It has only permanent interests.
Okay, appreciate the contribution. Johnny Miller in Moscow, Greg Simons in Uppsala, Sweden. Welcome back. Let's move on with the rest of this newscast. In South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa has secured his second five-year term as leader of the governing African National Congress. Ramaphosa beat former Health Minister Zweli Mkhize in a ballot at a party gathering in Johannesburg. He won some 57% of the ballots. Ramaphosa's re-election as the ANC leader sets the stage for him to contest the 2024 presidential vote. He was in hot water in recent weeks after an independent special inquiry submitted a report suggesting he concealed the theft of several million dollars from his farm in 2020. Ramaphosa has acknowledged the robbery but denied any wrongdoing. The president challenged the report in court and was not charged with any crime, but some opponents still want him to resign. Now, thousands of Sudanese take to the streets of capital Khartoum to protest a recently signed deal
between the country's military and civilian leaders. Protesters chanted slogans against the deal, calling on soldiers to go back to their barracks. They waved Sudanese flags and carried posters bearing images of those who have been killed during anti-coup demonstrations since October 2021. Security forces fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. The military and civilian leaders signed an initial deal aimed at ending the political crisis in the country on the 5th of December. Sudan has experienced political turmoil since last year's military takeover. The country has grappled with protests, an economic crisis, and rising ethnic clashes since then. More than 120 people are said to have been killed in the military crackdown on the protests. In Afghanistan, people are calling for an independent and transparent probe into dozens of summer killings by the UK's Special Air Service troops in Afghanistan. And that after years of reports that elite British forces killed civilians in cold blood. We have a report from Kabul.
Afghan people have been calling for transparent and impartial investigations into crimes and wrongdoings by NATO forces on their soil. Among them, relatives of victims of the NATO war in southern Helmand province are demanding justice for the killing of 54 unarmed people by British Special Air Service troops there. The dead include children. Afghans want the murderers should be held accountable. However, the UK government has announced the start of an inquiry into wrongdoings by its forces in Afghanistan, but some experts say only transparent probes by independent bodies can help make headway with the case. They believe investigations by foreign governments could cover up the facts about the gross violations at the hands of their forces in Afghanistan. During the two-decade U.S. invasion, Afghanistan witnessed much disgrace by NATO troops. More and more facts are emerging regarding unlawful killings and gross violations by foreign forces on Afghan soil. The U.S. war on Afghanistan has left many Afghans in great suffering. People here are calling for accountability and justice for years of gross violation by the NATO troops. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
When it comes to the relationship between the U.S. and the EU, things are not as black and white as they appear to be. Both may be united when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, but when it comes to trade, there are divisions. For example, the EU does not believe the U.S. should have economic incentives to entice European companies to set up shop in the U.S. And on China, the U.S. wants the EU to step back, but the EU can't afford it. That is the topic of today's program. Now, some of the highlights of this program that will be coming up: the U.S. pressure on EU, an anti-China policy is what the U.S. would like the EU to pursue. But the EU says it has its own China policy, and it will resist the U.S. pressure on that front. But to what degree? That's the question. Next, another highlight in terms of EU-China trade. China is the third largest buyer of European goods. And China, well, it's the most important market for imported EU products. Will that be the direction that the EU will take in terms of making its decision on this? We have to wait and see. Something that will be coming up later in the program. And then the U.S. anti-China stance. Beijing is a growing threat to U.S. companies, and it's pushing EU to use export control against China. Again, to what degree?
As tensions rise between the West and Russia, the U.S. is pushing the EU to toe the line on China. For years, Western countries have raised alarm bells over the rise of China. The East Asian nation has been making steady economic progress for decades. It has also made significant gains in the fields of technology, science, and telecommunications. Beijing is now a giant producer in microchips. These developments have made Washington and its Western allies concerned. They fear that China's progress and its alliance with other emerging nations like Russia and Iran will dent the West hegemony.
I had a long meeting with Xi Jinping at the G20. We have met for over 80 hours over the last 10 years. We know each other well, and he's a little upset that we're deciding we're going to once again be, you know, and so are European friends. They're talking about the supply chain. We're going to be the supply chain. The difference is going to be we're going to make that supply chain available to the rest of the world, but we're not going to be held hostage anymore.
The U.S. is now pushing the EU, following its anti-Beijing policies. U.S. officials have told European counterparts to consider using export control restrictions on China. But the question is that the bloc cannot afford a confrontational approach towards China. The European Union has described China as a strategic rival, but it is pursuing a different approach from the U.S. Analysts say instead of decoupling from China, the EU is pursuing to de-risk its relations with Beijing. Decoupling refers to the separation of economic ties between the two superpowers, but for the EU, this is not in its interest.
When it comes to online media posts on this, it was quite actually amazing to see that many users many people who are online tweeting or posting on this are aware of what is happening between the EU and the U.S., especially when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine. So let's see if the ones that we picked for you actually show that. First up, the first post says, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. Now, taking a look at this website, we went in a little deeper, why Western leaders are deeply divided on how to deal with China. Now, this was the entry was made on December the 1st, keep in mind. It said European Council President Charles Michel heads to Beijing on December 1st, the latest in a procession of Western leaders to seek an audience with Xi Jinping, the Chinese president. The United States are our most important ally, but in some cases, we will not be in the same position or on the same approach towards China. Next up, another sign that the EU will never help us put pressure on China. The EU and China agreed to work together to address global food insecurity after holding a bilateral meeting on trade and financial services. The next tweet, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. There have been reports about Dutch concerns over new U.S. export restrictions to China. So there you have it. This showed these posts that we picked how there is pushback coming from the EU when it comes to the U.S. Let's find out what our guests think in our first segment of the Q&A. Let me introduce them. Dr. Kui Hong-Jian joins us. He's the head of the European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies. Dr. Kui Hong-Jian, welcome to Economic Divide. The head of the U.S., that is, wants the EU to be strict with China. That we know. Europe says, well, we can't afford that. And while the European Union has dubbed China as a strategic rival, maybe following the U.S. line there, is pursuing a different approach than what the U.S. wants it to. Because for starters, China is the third largest buyer of European goods. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. when it comes to this issue?
On one hand, there are very natural tendencies between three economies to have closer cooperation in trade investment. But on the other hand, also in if you just look at something from so-called geopolitical views, especially there are a lot of the efforts from the United States try to have some more competition or even confrontation against China. So I think there will be also more difficult situation for the European Union. Also, you know, mostly European Union try to always take use of its power as economy and also called a soft power or some other. So I think, yes, there will be some difficult question for European Union.
Indeed. Well, let me bring in our next guest. We have the pleasure of having him on this program, Dr. Ema McKinney. He's an eminent sinologist, editor, and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. He's got quite a sheet here in terms of his bio. He's also the director of the CBN Global He's a writer at the Financial Times, writer for The Economist, and also a Nobel Prize nominee. Dr. Emma McKinney, welcome to Economic Divide. Thanks for joining us. We're looking at how the U.S. wants the EU to have a different approach than it currently has, wants the EU to slow down in terms of trade, for example. That's the bulk of what the U.S. wants from the EU. And perhaps to gravitate back to the U.S. is something that the U.S. wants the EU to do. But at the same time, the EU doesn't want to go through the decoupling process that the U.S. Wants it to, the way the U.S. is doing with China. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. in the first place when it comes to, for example, trade?
Well, I think the business community in the EU is very much against not just this anti-China stance, because they've profited from it immensely, but also the Ukrainian war. So if we're talking about the EU is a particular institution. It doesn't necessarily represent the business community. It's populated largely with ideologues. Scholz recently from Germany has been over there trying to make friends again, and then as soon as he leaves, he makes some sort of statement to please the Americans. So it doesn't appear to be going anywhere.
The infinite section of the program is upon us, and we have chosen, as usual, four topics in order to review and give you what's going on with these issues. First up, something that has happened that is quite unbelievable and has been committed by the Bank of England. Now, according to this piece of news, it has overcharged, but the amount is incredible. It has caused havoc as a result of what's called error costs, and it will cost taxpayers £200 billion. And the caption read, "Now we all pay." It went on to say years of low interest rates and virtual money printing through quantitative easing looks set to land taxpayers with a massive bill. Nobody issued a warning on that. All right, this particular visit made lots of noise in so many ways. The Chinese President Xi Jinping in Saudi Arabia, based on the three-day visit that he had there, Saudi Arabia laid out a lavish welcome as the Chinese president heralded what he called was a new era in relations, of course, despite U.S. wariness as the U.S. looked on to this visit. Now, the Chinese president and the Saudi King Salman signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement and deals. It was reported to be worth around $30 billion, but I'm sure the relationship is going to give a lot more or add a lot more to that figure. And keep a note on another development that came out of this summit, and that was the fact that the Chinese president Xi Jinping said that some portions of the sales of oil to Saudi Arabia will occur in yuan, something that we have said before in this program, that we covered in this program from before. The UK is experiencing something that is really bad. It concerns food banks. There are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's, and that's a terrible sign of how bad the economy is doing there, and of course how people are dealing with the soaring food prices and inflation as a result. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes is forcing more Britons to rely on food aid in order to avoid starvation. Based on the counts that we got, more than 2 million people are depending on food aid in the UK. And finally, taking a look at the unemployment rate in the United States. Now, the unemployment claims are the highest since the month of February, as reports of major layoffs are beginning to grow. They actually were reported that that would happen, but now we're witnessing that. There are reports of widespread layoffs in technology firms that we have seen to have happened, firms like Meta or Facebook and Amazon, for example, or other tech firms. And also it has engulfed major corporations, leading to a sustained decline in the labor market as a result. All right, those four pieces of news with what we picked for you.
Financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
in-depth section of the program is upon us. The notion of the U.S. even suggesting to the EU that it should distance itself from China, especially when it comes to trade, puts into question whether the U.S. either has enough influence over the EU and what that influence could be. However, this is a case where the numbers really do speak for themselves, as we're about to find out. First up, let's take a look at the trade balance between the EU and China. We looked at data for the year 2019. That's before COVID hit, to get a more realistic understanding. EU exports to China stood at almost 200 billion euros, while EU imports from China stood at 362 billion euros. That left a deficit of 164 billion euros. Moving up next, in terms of the products or what types of products were exchanged or were traded, EU's top three imported categories of goods from China, well, 54% were machinery and vehicles, 37% other manufactured goods, and 5% were chemicals. Now, the top three exported goods, 55% were machinery, and that's really important, 18% other manufactured goods, and then 14% for chemicals. In terms of the EU-U.S. trade balance, it's worth taking a look at. Does the EU want it, or the U.S. want the EU to trade more with it than China? Well, you bet it does. I mean, EU exports to the U.S. for the year 2020 stood at 353.4 billion euros, while EU imports from the U.S. stood at 202.9 billion euros. That left the trade surplus of 150.5 billion euros. Now, in terms of China's major trading partners, let's look at that from the Chinese side. ASEAN countries came in at number one, and then the EU at number two, with the U.S. coming in at number three. Okay, so very evident the importance that both China and the EU have for each other. So how can the U.S. then ask the EU to abandon China or to even lessen trade with China? Now, on moving along those lines, let's take a look at the Chinese trade in the first 2 months of 2022. To further drive this point home, is foreign trade in the first 2 months of 2022, well, the EU came in at number one. I mean, what a bounce back from COVID-19. It registered $137.16 billion, with the U.S. coming in at second. Okay, so there you have the Chinese angle to this whole story. All right, so there you have the figures, especially from the Chinese side towards the end there. Let me reintroduce our guest for a breakdown, Dr. Kui Hoon Jeon, head of European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies, rejoins us. Dr. Kui Hoon Jeon, welcome back. Taking a look at the French president's visit to the U.S. due to this Inflation Reduction Act, which has threatened Europe and European industries, in particular factories. Europe accuses the U.S. of profiting from war, and you have EU officials who have also attacked practically Joe Biden over these sky-high gas prices. Has Europe finally woken up and smelled the coffee there?
I think the European Union realized the real situation, especially its relations with the United States. It is not on this moment. Also, in years ago, the European Union and especially some major member states like France, they raised the issue of to build up a kind of European strategic autonomy. I think it's a very, very big showcase for European Union, for the European countries, to understand that they could not depend on the United States in the security area, in economic and trade and some other. So to get some more, to get some more independence from this, from its relations with the United States, I think it's a very, very, obvious tendency for the European Union, for most of the European countries.
All right, Dr. Imon McKinney rejoins us, eminent sinologist, editor and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. Dr. Imon McKinney, welcome back. We keep hearing about the EU not having independence and that the U.S. actually dictates the EU's direction, but how is that done? Does the U.S. have that much of a stranglehold on Europe?
I think the thing about it is the European community itself, it doesn't have any independence anymore. Its policy is dictated by America. I mean, the EU has been impoverished by everything that they're doing. And there doesn't seem to be any pushback from any of these limp-wristed leaders in the EU. The EU is being treated by America as another sacrifice zone ready for plunder once it's been destroyed. Just like they did with Eastern Europe with their shock therapy. in the 1990s, and I think it's lining up exactly the same thing for Ukraine and then Germany and the rest of Europe. I don't think that the European Union has the backbone to stand up to America, quite frankly.
But when you want to take a look at to what degree Europe is going to keep listening to the U.S., that's the question. I mean, is it going to be to the point that it's going to fall off an economic cliff? I mean, is that how intimidated the EU is from the U.S., that it's willing to risk its independence and its union?
Will Europe cut its own throat? It's already doing that. China is one of the few growth markets left in the world, and to cut yourself off from that makes about as much economic sense as supporting the war in the Ukraine. It's a complete act of madness and self-destruction.
According to data, in 2021, China was the third largest buyer of European goods. It was also the most important market for imported EU products. The importance of China for the EU has become more crucial since the bloc's economy is struggling from the conflict in Ukraine. Tensions between the EU and Russia have restricted EU's trade options, and that is the reason why the bloc cannot lose a huge trading partner. Just recently, the European Council President Charles Michel visited China to make sure that trade ties between Beijing and Brussels would improve when China lifts its anti-COVID restrictions. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz also traveled to China in early November to cement business relations. The improvement in ties comes at a time when relations between the U.S. and the EU has turned a bit sour.
I think we have very clearly defined our, if I could frame it, manifold relationship to China. And you know the three elements, indeed, they are constructive parts, they are competitive parts, and there are clear rivalry parts in it.
It has been argued that the U.S. is using the war in Ukraine for its own advantage. By pumping more weapons into Ukraine, the U.S. is actually prolonging the conflict there. The war has turned into an opportunity for the U.S. to push the EU to follow Washington's policies. Furthermore, President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act has turned Europeans angry. The act promotes U.S. businesses at the expense of Europeans.
The U.S. turning Europe into a vassal state is what I would like to talk about here and ask whether that has happened or not. The Russia-Ukraine war, which had a U.S. plan since Crimea became part of Russia, achieved several goals for the U.S., which turning into the EU into a vassal state was one of them. But what is the definition of vassal? Simply put, a vassal is one in a subservient or subordinate position. The U.S. goal in the Ukraine conflict was to destabilize and weaken Russian military and economically as a geopolitical force in Europe. It then wanted to isolate Russia completely from the rest of Europe. One of the ways which it achieved that was to militarily encircle Russia through the NATO expansion. This involved the placement of American forces and weapons in European countries, while at the same time using scaremongering into making European countries think they could be next after Ukraine. These European nations surrendered significant portions of their sovereignty to the U.S., which provided them with military protection under the guise of NATO. And the U.S. itself, let's not forget, the U.S. has several dozen army, air force, and naval bases and thousands of soldiers stationed in several EU countries. But the U.S. needed something else to make sure that the EU became a vassal state, and that was economic domination. This is where the energy card comes in. A natural consequence of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine was that the prices of energy commodities shot up. From gas to oil, European countries are still struggling to find alternatives. Just recently, the EU applied a $60 price cap on Russian oil, a move rejected by Russia outright. This was seen as a move to please the US and no one else, since Putin's war budget won't take a hit from oil price cap, since price ceiling were near market levels and it wouldn't hit ruble revenues much. And although it may be easier to find alternatives for oil, gas would be a different matter altogether. Russia was supplying EU countries with 40% of their natural gas. The US made sure this would be cut off indefinitely, making good on the US President Joe Biden's threat on damaging the Nord Stream gas pipeline, even though the European Union has said it will cut gas imports from Russia by two-thirds over the coming year. By cutting gas usage by 15% over the next 7 months, it would still suffer both from residential use and industrial use. The verdict is out on whether the EU's efforts to have gas supplies from producers such as the US and Qatar will pay off. The problem is there aren't enough LNG terminals in Europe to fulfill Europe's gas needs. So when you have rely on the US for your security needs and energy and economic needs, as in the case of the EU, you are left in a precarious situation, which is why the EU has been called a vassal state of the US. That's the end of this segment of the program.
We've already told you how the EU is subservient to the US. The US goal of breaking the EU apart, from the looks of it, is in full swing, and it continues, since when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, there are no signs that it's going to end anytime soon. And a final blow could come in the form of China, since the US wants to do to China what it's done to Russia, albeit at a slower pace maybe. But nevertheless, China being a target. Maybe that's why it is telling the EU to slow down trade with China. That does it for this edition of the program. Again, great to have you with us week in, week out. Fumiko Watabe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. Brothers and sisters, as you were with us in the discussion of the Kumail supplication, we have reached this part. لَكِنَّكَ تَقَدَّسَتْ أَسْمَاؤُكَ أَقْسَمْتَ أَن تَمْلَأَهَا مِنَ الْكَافِرِينَ مِنَ الْجِنَّةِ وَالنَّاسِ أَجْمَعِينَ وَأَن تُخَلِّدَ فِيهَا الْمُعَانِدِينَ But you, holy are your names, have sworn that you will fill it with the unbelievers, both jinn and men,
and you will place those who stubbornly resist forever therein. وَأَنْتَ جَلَّ ثَنَاؤُكْ قُلْتَ مُبْتَدِئًا, and you, majestic, is your eulogy, said through kindness. وَتَطَوَّلْتَ بِالْإِنْعَامِ مُتَكَرِّمًا, as a favor. أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مُؤْمِنًا كَمَنْ كَانَ فَاسِقًا لَا يَسْتَوُ, is he who has been a believer like him who has been ungodly? They are not equal. As we said in the previous episode, this is really important to differentiate between the mu'min and the fasiq. Of course, these two have their own inner sides of effects, and of course, the Almighty Allah has prepared some blessings for the true mu'min and some chastisements for the true fasiq. And that is a part of the justice from the side of the Almighty Allah we talk about. Now, the importance of being a fasiq that keeps us away from the mercy of the Almighty Allah has got different sides and different aspects. One important aspect, though, that is, I assume, directly related to our discussion here is the effect it has on the acceptance of the supplication. I mean, there are some hindrances, there are some obstacles and impediments that prevent a prayer from ascending to Allah. And the, of course, important question for all of us might be that what are these obstacles and impediments that prevent a prayer from being ascended to Allah? So, supplication is the ascending Qur'an, Al-Qur'an al-Sa'id, which is different from the descending Qur'an, which is the Qur'an we recite. The descending Qur'an calls us toward servanthood of the Almighty Allah, turning to Him and taking shelter in Him. The Holy Qur'an differentiates between the true mu'min and the fasiq, the ungodly and the believer. That is why this verse of the Holy Qur'an has been mentioned here. أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مُؤْمِنًا كَمَنْ كَانَ فَاسِقًا لَا يَسْتَوُونَ. Now let us turn back to the importance and role of sins and being a fasiq in veiling man from Allah. We'll be back to discuss that after a short break.
Decreed your enemies to remain in hell, you would have made hell cool and peaceful, and there would never have been an abode or place for anyone in it. But sanctified be your name, you have sworn to fill hell with the disbelievers from amongst the jinns and mankind together, and to place forever your enemies therein. And you, exalted be your praises, have made manifest out of your generosity and kindness that a believer is not like he who is a non-believer.
Paradise, oh what a feeling, paradise. Thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So about this part of this Kumail supplication, that this verse of the Holy Quran is mentioned, أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مُؤْمِنًا كَمَنْ كَانَ فَاسِقًا لَا يَسْتَوُونَ, we have to consider that bad deeds that turn a man into a fasiq play two roles in man's life. The first role is that they take man away from Allah. They cut him off from him. And the result, of course, is obviously that the man is unable to attain the state of turning towards Allah, which is the reality of being a mu'min and supplicating to him. The reality is that the sinner is veiled from Allah by his sins, and then he will surely be veiled by them from supplication and the acceptance of dua as well. The second role of sins is that they prevent the prayer to ascending to Allah. And this is totally different from the first one. The first one is something that is the result of the action itself. And the second one is the result that Almighty Allah has set for this deviated act. And this is the kind of thing we tried to discuss in the previous episode. Now, if a prayer reaches Allah, then the response from him would certainly be accompanied. Because, of course, he's not incapable of answering an response. But there are some supplications that lack the ability to reach him. And the fact is that sometimes sins stop a person from supplicating. And sometimes the person might supplicate, but these sins will somehow withhold the ascent of a prayer to Allah. So, in short, there are two kinds of results for our actions. The kind of results that are for their own, I mean, naturally, they have these results with them, and they are the cause for them. And the second kinds of results is the ones that the Almighty Allah has set for them as chastisement or reward. I assume this cursory look at the effect of sins and the difference of being a fasiq and mu'min that this verse of the Holy Quran says in this part of the Qumayyah supplication needs more explanation. So stay tuned for the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through half my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.